pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our God, we come to you this morning thanking you for the many blessings that you give us and asking that you continue to watch over us and keep us in your favor. We ask that you guide us as we conduct the public's business and always keep in our hearts kindness and truth as we go about that business. We ask, God, that you really give a special blessing to our men and women in the armed services who are called upon to make incredible sacrifices. We thank you for their courage. We thank you for their service. And we thank you for the freedoms and the liberties that we have because of that. Keep them safe and melt the hatred in hearts of men and women around the world that drive us to war. And please bring us to a moment of peace so that we can enjoy the full fruits and blessings of your love in all ways. In your Son's name we pray. Amen.
Past 9:30, we have a public hearing for OPERS bond notes.
These are, they're going to be issuing amount not to exceed maximum principal of $100 million anticipation bonds for Ohio Presbyterian Retirement Services. It's at a multi-county facility and number of counties. We are not the lead county, but just one of them that the counties of Butler, Lucas, Mahoning, Ottawa, Shelby, Summit, Trumbull, Hamilton, Clinton are the counties.
Is there anyone here that would like to address the commission during this public hearing? Anyone like to address the commission during this public hearing? Yes, sir. If you'd come forward and state your name and address, please.
Stan Cappers. I'm the executive director at Mount Pleasant Retirement Village representing OPRS. And my address is 4067 Lampy Creek Lane, Mason, Ohio. Where we would use the money from OPRS here in Butler County would be at Mount Pleasant Retirement Village. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Would be at Mount Pleasant Retirement Village for three structures. We call them brownstones. Three-story units. Underground parking is one story, two stories above ground, 20 units apiece. And that would help us further our mission at Mount Pleasant, creating more niches in the marketplace. We're in an industry where we're having less and less revenue from Medicare and Medicaid, and we got to find new ways to increase revenues to keep our mission going. So this will help us do that. Thank you.
Thank you for that explanation. Thank you very much. You do a good job. Anyone else like to address commission during this public hearing?
Move to close public hearing.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
And Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
And I then do have a resolution to adopt to grant applicable elected representatives approval in connection with the issuance of revenue bonds for Ohio Presbyterian Retirement Services.
We're not
at risk on this issue. It's a pass-through.
Liability.
Correct.
Okay. Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes. Thank you. Joe?
I've got three replats here today. The first one is Denzel Moore Estates in Westchester. It's an existing built subdivision, and the applicant is looking to remove a utility easement on the rear of the property, and spoke with all the utilities companies, and that is okay with them. Planning Commission did pass this.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
The second is Eureka Commercial Park in Fairfield Township. The applicant is looking to remove a private drainage easement, similar to one that was removed a couple months ago on the adjacent property. This was also, of course, approved by the Planning Commission.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
The third replat that I have is for Kinfolk Acres in Liberty Township, lots 6 and 7. There is a property being changed between the property owners, adjacent property owners. They are actually deeding some of that land to one another. So,
say Kinfolk?
Kinfolk Acres, that's correct.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
And David is here to do the rest of the final plats. The first item I have is Indian Springs Market Center. It's a replat of two lots. They're taking one lot and cutting it into two in Fairfield Township.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
The second item I have is Bethany Station subdivision. This is for 22 new lots in Westchester Township.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
And the last item I have is the Highlands subdivision. This is a commercial project on Cincinnati Dayton Road in Westchester.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Mr. President, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Dave, what, you know, the folks out in Ross, I believe, defeated the zoning change, didn't they? Or so what's the options for, what could happen now? What's the options for the developer?
Well, funny you should ask. The applicant has turned in a new rezoning request with actually more lots this time. We haven't talked to him directly, but based on his quotes in the newspaper, the developer, I think, is proposing this and somehow thinks he would like it to go through all the public hearings and be denied by each board and then go to court.
And have
somehow have a court decide. I don't know what the precedent would that would be. I see no reason why a court would rule in his favor, but just based on his quotes in the newspaper.
An option for us is to approve it and have the residents again petition to place it on a referendum.
That could certainly.
He's asking us to disapprove it.
Well, based on the quotes in the newspaper, he's saying that he would like to take his chances with the courts since it was turned down by referendum. It's more units than before, so I don't believe it's a plan he seriously wants to get approved.
And you're bound, I mean, the Planning Commission and the, you know, they're bound to follow the law. So, and before he followed the law and they approved it.
Right. But this actually has more units and would appear to be in conflict with what we have in our land use plan. So we as a staff, we haven't completed our review, but I believe we'll probably recommend denial of it because it's not in keeping with what's in our land use plan. Not sure what the purpose of all this is other than to read into his quotes in the paper that he's going to take his chances in court. So he did turn an application into Joe, and so we have to process it. We have to have all the public hearings again. It's a new application, new filing fee.
Is he actually turned it in yet?
Yeah, he's turned it in.
Yeah, we can't officially accept that until the elections have certified by the Board of Elections.
Looks like it'll go to our Planning Commission in June, our June meeting. Planning Commission, Zoning Commission, and then on to you.
Now, once he turns it in, let's say he, theoretically, although practically not, probably not possible, but theoretically, if he wanted to sit down with the school district and the citizen groups and come up with something that they may be more favorably inclined to accept, or can he come back and modify it in the process to reflect that?
No. Another new application.
We'd have to resubmit again.
So, disappointing to say the least, but.
I mean, I just don't understand his, the thinking is that a judge is going to overturn the planning commission if he is increasing the houses, and which is against the zoning or the amount that's allowed. How does he expect the judge to say, hey, this is okay?
Well, I think he's arguing that it is allowed within the zoning classification, correct?
Well, but since this rezoning, we've talked to Ross Township, and they're actually they want to update their land use plan.
Mm-hmm.
Before their long range plan said on that piece of property you could have up to 4 homes per acre. Well, they are in the process of having that changed and revised down to maybe 2 homes per acre, and his new proposal is way over that. So we're actually going through the public hearings, and this was all started before he even turned in an application. So we've been working with the township for some time on.
So what law controls his application?
Right.
So the land use plan is probably going to be updated before his application begins.
But then he would argue that his argument would be, well, since I filed when it was allowed to have 4, that law governs. You know what the court.
That maybe that's his.
But if he files, it has to be accepted, right? In order to be accepted, then the law of what's on the books right now would be the one governing.
Right. But I think, you know, we're hopeful that the land use plan is going to be adopted before the change to the land use plan be adopted before you guys would ever see the zone change case.
And I think what this illustrates and goes back to the conversation we had when the folks from Hanover were in, is that the way the Ohio law is structured, it throws everybody into reverse positions. The people that want to kill it ask you to approve it, and the people that want to approve it ask you to kill it.
Right.
And it's just bizarre, and it shows that they need to go back and, I think, make some modifications on that.
You know, we wish he would sit down with the residents and have them give them a list of what is it that you can live with.
Correct.
And let him crunch the numbers and see if he can make his development work. He just doesn't.
You know, but after going through the public hearing, there I think it's a mixed bag from the residents. Some say, hey, they're willing to work,
yeah.
And others are saying, hey, let's put a wall up.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I think that if they, from what I followed at the end, you know, at the end I read an article about where he said he had offered to give the schools so much per lot and so forth. If you go back to the hearing, I specifically asked him about that, and they got up and said they had given all they were going to give because they'd already taken and modified the plan over what was originally submitted. But yet, then he came back and said, well, gee, I would give the school. I think having, you know, I don't want to advise people on how to do their business, but given the what we're going through in every one of these proposals, anyone wanting to develop some of these properties, I would advise them to sit down with the school district and the trustees and the citizen groups. There are always going to be somebody against it, but to at least make an attempt to come to the table with some specific ideas about here's what we're going to do to deal with the impact. And other communities have done this. And it's his business, but
it's just when you go this far along, it's hard for people to be open-minded and start to work together if you've, you know, spent so much time and effort and referendums, and it's
right.
It's hard to get people to go back and work together.
Lines are drawn.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where we're at, so stay tuned.
Thank you. anything else? Anything? Okay. We'll wait to see if Don Hirschner shows up for a proclamation. Go to communications.
Okay, first would be approved minutes from the last meeting, approved travel and training, approved 8 CSCA payroll adjustments, amend resolution for Area 3 court, hire parking garage attendant, hire a temporary part-time intern for Department of Development, hire bailiff for Area 3 Court, hire intern for Record Center, Accept the resignation part-time intern for Department of Development. Approve 12 Butler County Care Facility personnel actions. Grant special hauling permit to Panel Barn Lumber Incorporated. Receive and refer contract for north paving of various township roads. Approve environmental covenant for Cincinnati Dayton Road. Award contract 6-4 to SK Construction for Cincinnati Dayton Road project. Receive and refer contract for 6-6 for Yankee Road Extension Phase 3. Approve agreement with Burgess and Nyepel. Award contract 6-10 to Terry Asphalt Material. Grant special hauling permit to CJNL Construction. Receive and refer contract 6-1 for intersection improvement for Allen Road. Award contract for 6-2 to Don S. Sissel for intersection improvements. Approve dedication. Did we do do we have a dedication plat? Take a left. That's upstairs, actually, for Lakota Lane under Environmental Services. Award contract 3-C4 to Howell Contractors for Allen Road Phase 3 Water Main Extension. Amend resolution adopted April 13th for performance bond. Approve extension of contract with PLG Utility Restoration. Release maintenance bonds for Alsac Meadows and Foxborough Section 2C. Hire temporary employee. Approve agreement with M&E Companies for engineering services. Receive and refer contract 6-A5 for Mount Pleasant Lift Station Elimination. Approve promotion to staff engineer. Approve OPWC disbursement request for 05 cast iron water main replacement. Approve and execute encroachment agreement with between commissioners and the Lakota School District. Approve and execute agreement with Hazen and Sawyer PC for engineer services. Advertise for bids for the Rialto-Mulhauser interconnection project. Approve and execute agreement with Malcolm Perney for engineering services. WPC Solutions Incorporated for capacity analysis. JJ&G for engineering services. Approve Milliken Road water main extension. Approve water and sewer extension to Glenview Farm Estates, Foxborough. Receive and refer bids for household hazardous waste collection services. Approve change order for Upper Mill Creek waste water reclamation facility improvements. Approve an increase in estimated amounts for contract with Adelita Construction. Approve an agreement with Malcolm Perney for professional engineering services. Approve transfers and appropriations. Under Job and Family Services, accept employees' payroll April 1st through April 14th, April 15th through April 28th. Receive and refer contract for management consulting services. Approve child daycare contract for BC Educational Services Center. Approve and execute Amendment 1 for contract for lifespan. And addendum amendment number 2 with Adult Care Enterprises. Advertise for bids for mental functional capacity assessment services. Approve child daycare contract with Ivy Creative Angels Academy. Approve contract for management services to Community Behavior Health. Authorize two suspensions of employees. Advertise for bids for lease of office space under contract 5-007. Under miscellaneous, approve agreement between Butler County Commissioners and Liberty Township. Employ outside legal counsel for the collection of hotel tax through the internet. Approve reimbursement to Workforce One for team meeting. Execute incumbency certificate for Diebold Credit Corporation escrow agreement. Approve memorandum of understanding between Butler County, MRDD, and Record Center for our imaging system. Proceed with improvements to Mount Pleasant sewer improvement areas and establish Mount Pleasant sewer improvement area. Ratify plans and changes for various sewer improvements to the Mount Pleasant area. Award contract for lease of office space for auditor to MKJAS Properties. Approve agreement for 6 months with SBC for telephone maintenance and authorize execution, and approve an agreement, execute a renewal agreement with Maximus that do our indirect cost study.
Any questions or?
If there's no questions or adjustments, I move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
And for Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, is there anyone here who'd like to address commission in the audience? Anyone here like to address commission with any issue? Okay.
I do, sir.
Yeah. John?
I came in a little bit late, so I don't know. You might have already talked about it. I was here to see about an appointment of three new board members for the Convention and Visitors Bureau.
John, we didn't do it. I'll be reviewing it with the commissioners over the next couple days.
Okay.
What is, if somebody can tell, is our choice simply to either approve or disapprove, or can we?
You can do whatever you want. They can recommend, but you can take the recommendation or not take the recommendation.
Now, I was told, according to their bylaws, that we're restricted in, other words,
You're not governed by their bylaws. They know that that's just a recommendation.
But could we come back and say that we've appointed somebody different?
Yes, you could. It's your board. It's your appointment. We set it up so that they could recommend to you folks.
Oh, okay. Make sure you check that, because...
I already have. I'm familiar.
You already have?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, good. Okay. What were the three names that you recommended, John?
Oh, we actually submitted four to pick three people from that were recommended by the board. One was Todd Smith. He's a hotelier from Westchester. He presently owns two hotels there and is building a third, Courtyard by Marriott. Sarah Kaufman is the creative service director at Jungle Gyms. And then Ed Hartman is the marketing director for Furniture Fair and is well known for his commercials with Anthony Munoz, but his degree and his expertise is in marketing. And then Judge John Moser was the other one that was submitted.
How many vacancies are we pulling?
Three.
And what we were looking for, our sense of urgency was so that we could get them on the board. We're in the midst of hiring our executive director. They've got applications now, resumes. I think over 35 have been submitted for the executive director. And we will be picking the executive director at our June meeting. Our subcommittee is going to weed down the resumes to top five. They're going to interview those and then present the board with the top two. And so we're looking to have the full board help us in our decision with the two at our June meeting. And we will have a executive director hired by June the 30th, and they will start work July 10th to be the executive.
Go ahead and do that anyway, right?
We can go ahead and do it anyway, but we just wanted to get the whole board on so that they would be a part of the process.
We're gonna do that Monday.
Yeah, we'll try to have it ready for Monday.
Is that okay as far as your
yes, sir.
Time?
That would give us time to get notice to them so they could be at the June meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you going to be around after the meeting, or you have other appointments?
Sir?
Are you going to be around after the meeting?
Yes, sir. I can be here.
If you have time, I'd like to meet with you after this.
Okay.
If it works with your schedule.
Yes, sir. I'd be fine.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Is there? Yes, sir.
Commissioners, Mr. Conklin, my name's Ian Cawthorn from Peck Schaefer. I was also running a little bit late. I'm here for the OPRS public hearing. I know you guys probably went ahead.
Yes.
All right, sounds good. I didn't know if you had questions, if we were going to adopt the resolution
we
today.
We did.
Fantastic.
The director from Mount Pleasant actually was here.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, I apologize for being
perfect.
Late, and thank
yep.
you for...
Thanks. Nice job.
Wonderful.
It gets easier.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I'm not sure if you should bill for that, but that's up to you.
They'll bill.
Yeah. I have something, unless there's someone else in the audience. We've received a request from the Middletown Airport for request for $100,000 to help with hangars and renovations. And being involved with the Hamilton's Airport as when I was on City Council and Mayor, and when we formed a partnership with Fairfield and in the county, I see the value of being able to help the Middletown Airport, because I think that as the Hamilton and Butler County Airport to the south is a diamond for our economic development, so is the Middletown Airport. I don't know that much about the future plans of the airport, the master plan. I don't know what sort of support they've received from the FAA, and I don't know what type of activity the Middletown Airport has done to try to convince neighboring communities to become partners with them in order to help with the funding and the operation of the airport. I would like to see those things done and to recommend to the commission that that we hold this request off until the first of the year when we discuss our budget and the economic development budget for next year, given the our budget situation. I would like to have those things happen. I'd like to see Middletown show a interest in expanding the partnership into the airport, to give us a master plan, and to ask the FAA what type of future plans does Hook Field play in the overall scheme of the regional airports. So I'd like to, you know, I throw that out for the commission to
I had, Mr. President?
Yes.
I had talked to, I think,
Jimmy Johnson.
Jimmy Johnson, yeah. And actually, I thought it was $50,000. Was it, did he up it?
Well, I've got a request, I got a letter that came from the chamber saying that $100,000 is being requested by Mr. Jim Johnson of the Hook Field.
Huh, they must have upped it $50,000 after I sent the email to you, Derek.
We're not sending you anywhere.
Must have encouraged them. But my understanding is that the city of Middletown has invested, according to him, and this is all I know, according to him, about $1.1 million in the airport thus far. The money that he's requesting has to do with the renovation of a hangar facility on the grounds, which he argues will have a beneficial effect in their ability to market the airport. As we found in the Hamilton facility, as you improve the facilities, you improve you increase utilization and so forth. I don't know why we would need to wait till the end of the year to get the answers to your questions. I think it'd be useful if one of the things I suggested that they do is, number one, submit to us in writing a proposal. Did we receive from Mr. Johnson a proposal in writing?
I received basically a letter of request, but I haven't received, I wouldn't call it a proposal.
Yeah, I think the questions that you're raising, Commissioner Jolivet, are good questions to ask, and I think that from where I said, I would go back to Mr. Johnson and Middletown officials and say, look, we want to look at this in terms of the region and the extent to which you've forged partnerships, if at all, how much specifically. The only thing I know about how much has been invested, is what Mr. Johnson syndicated. In other words, to put it together as a proposal where you say, here's what the city's invested, here are the future plans. In other words, to actually put some meat on the bones of the proposal, address the questions that Commissioner Jolivet has raised, and I want to get a better understanding of how it went from $50,000 to $100,000, and from the time I spoke to him, maybe I'm having a faulty memory moment, Derek, but I thought in the email I sent to you I'd requested
$50,000. I think it was
$50,000. So, so for me, I'd like to know, why did it go from $50,000 to $100,000? What was the rationale of that? I mean, I just not be remembering it right. And then we can look at it in terms of, you know, how time sensitive is it? What are the benefits if you do it now versus later? Have Mr. Johnson come in. The other recommendation I made to him was go to the city of Middletown. Do we have any correspondence or any communication from the city itself? I think it's important to know whether the city itself is supporting this officially. I mean, they've put money in it, but do they support this specific request? And have him come before the commission with a formal proposal, and we can address some of the questions you've raised and put it in the context of where we are as to whether or not we need to wait till the end of the year. Yes, we have real budget issues, but I want to know what the cost benefit on this would be. I support the proposal. I originally sent it to Derek and asked that it be put on the agenda for consideration, but I think the questions that you raise are important questions to get answered. And as we have done with the airport here in Hamilton, while we put a lot of money into the airport, and we've seen the benefits of that investment, we also have other communities that have shared in that responsibility as well. And it would be nice to see that same model used in the northern part of the county.
Yeah, I don't think that we'd have to wait till the end of the year to get some information. I'm just, before the request, we need to make sure we put in the scope of our budget and where we are.
I understand.
We've been able to leverage a lot of federal and state grant money also for the
Hamilton,
and I don't know what steps they've taken there.
Okay, I'll get a letter going and further conversation with the
city. We want to do is get a formal proposal.
Convince us.
And say, here's what we're going to do, here's our long-term plan, and here's what we expect to get in return for that. I happen to believe, we've put a lot of money in the southern airport, and there are very few projects that even come to us from the northern part of the county that relate to economic development. And I when we do get an opportunity, by virtue of Hamilton being the county seat and the growth path of the county being focused more in the southeastern quadrant, by necessity, a lot of our investment goes into projects in those areas. It benefits the whole county, but nonetheless, the economic development benefit goes into those areas. When we see an opportunity to develop, to enhance development initiatives in the northern part of the county, particularly in the Middletown area, where in the past they've always said that, they don't get the attention they deserve, I think we should jump on that opportunity.
Okay. Anyone else? Mike?
I do. I have sent to each of you via email a proposal that is a follow-up to a discussion we had, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, or some time ago. And what I've done in this proposal is outline 10 specific steps that I would like for this commission to take to improve, to do our part to improve enforcement of laws prohibiting the hiring of illegal aliens. I want to start my comments by reading the preamble of the U.S. Constitution. And this is the first duty that's imposed upon the federal government. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of freedom, blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. The first duty imposed on the federal government is to protect, provide for the common defense, which I think is protecting our borders. They failed to do that. The failure to do that imposes a significant burden on our community. We just had this, we just discussed an opportunity to potentially enhance economic development initiatives in Middletown. And we have budget restrictions that overshadow every decision we make on expenditures. One of the reasons our budget is stretched is looking at projections for this year. Our taxpayers will spend about $600,000 or more housing people that shouldn't be in the United States anyway. They might as well put white flags all across the southern and northern border of America, because we've surrendered control of our borders. The federal government is politically paralyzed. Both the Democrats and the Republicans are pandering to the Hispanic vote, and as a consequence, they've defined this as a Hispanic issue as opposed to a national interest issue. There are more than just Hispanics coming across those borders. Unfortunately, there are terrorists and people that want to hurt us. And their failure to act creates a burden on our government and other local governments. Specifically, there are very few areas where we can engage this issue, but there are some. First, let me deal with the question of whether or not the arguments that have been made that this is a federal responsibility. Yes, it is primarily a federal responsibility, but under the law, and I give you the section in the site, there are specific provisions that allow local governments and local communities to enter into agreements with the Immigration Naturalization Services to become partners in the enforcement mechanism. But apart from that, there are 10 things that I've outlined here. Some are simple, some are more long-term in their effect. For example, just when someone applies for a building permit, just having one form where they declare and promise that they'll follow the laws of the state of Ohio and the federal government, and advising them at that time about the prohibition against hiring illegal immigrants in the course of exercising their the construction that's permitted by that permit, and having them sign that declaration and having them acknowledge that they're aware of the law, I think has a deterrent effect, and it is a reminder that if you're doing this, it's unlawful, and there are substantial fines and penalties associated with those who are caught and prosecuted. Second, to require subcontractors, because we all know the game. And the game is they hire one person who is legitimate, they give them a 1099, and then they pay the other folks on the job in cash. I had a developer contact me this past week telling me that he had lost three or four jobs. He had to lay off four employees because he was told that the type of work that he did, they could hire illegals and work them 14 hours a day and pay them $50 a day. Well, we outlawed those types of employment practices 100 years ago in this country. And it's wrong because it's against the law, but it's also wrong because it creates an indentured servitude for those people that are here illegally. It's not good for them. They work in a shadow economy, and they should enjoy the same protections and opportunities that any other worker enjoys, provided they're legal. And it puts businesses that are trying to follow the law and play by the rules at a disadvantage, and we can do something to help those businesses that want to follow the law. In the event that our inspectors were to be on a job site and believe that there is some violation, just have a mechanism where we just refer that to the INS. That would be a simple referral. Just keep a record of that. If employers are subsequently found to have violated the law, the federal law, then we come back. I recommend a fourth item that we come back and charge them for falsification because they've declared that they did follow the law, they would follow the law, then they failed to, and it's not in compliance with our, and this is a discussion for Mike Yingling to figure out how to modify our building codes to make sure it's structured in there so that when they cover that, they enter into a duty to comply with it, so that if they violate and they found to be in violation, that we can then hold them responsible. A simple notice on the job site, require that along with the posting of the building permit, that a notice on the job site be posted that it is just recounting the federal law that prohibits the hiring and employment of illegal immigrants. Apply under Section 133, work with the Sheriff's Office, let them be the lead agency in this, but apply, have the county apply to become a partner, to exercise the option under the federal law to become a partner in the investigation, apprehension, and detention of illegal aliens. There is a provision to do that. And the seventh is more creative, and this is a question for a prosecutor, but given the fact that under the Constitution, they have a duty to provide for the common defense and promote general welfare and ensure domestic tranquility. Is there a constitutional question that can be imposed? It's interesting. People go to federal court all the time to enforce, for example, in education law, They go to federal court all the time to impose a duty on state and local governments to make sure that the duty those governments have to educate their children are in fact accomplished. There's a lot of 14th Amendments and actions and 1983 civil rights actions where the force of the federal government is brought upon agencies, federal agencies, state agencies, local agencies, to ensure that the responsibilities and duties imposed by the U.S. Constitution are in fact fulfilled. I'm suggesting in item 7 that we reverse it, that we go to federal court and impose on them, use the federal courts to impose on the U.S. government the responsibility to meet their first obligation under the Constitution. With respect to, you know, how would this all be enforced? You know, you set up these rules, policies, and procedures. So how would we enforce it? There's been concern expressed, well, you know, our building inspectors are busy and our budget's stretched and we don't want to take them away from their primary responsibility to make sure that construction is done in accordance with the building codes and the law and ensure the public safety. And I agree with that. We can put as much attention on this or as little as we want. I believe in the idea, and schools have used the idea of random drug tests very effectively, and we know from research that if there is a school that has random drug tests, that it affects the behavior of all the students, because if they know there's a risk of being tested, they are less likely to engage in illegal activity. The same thing would apply to those that can build under our permits, is that we would set up a random inspection or audit process where it would be fair. We don't even have to have our people do it. I've talked to the county auditor. She's already doing some work with the local vendors, the food industry in particular, to have a person on her staff assigned to working with them to make sure, A, they're aware of it, that there is a federal prohibition and there is a fine and criminal responsibility attached to it. But she's willing to, in effect, make it cost zero to our budget. She's already absorbing those responsibilities into hers, and she will, through an intergovernmental agreement, we can have the person she's assigned to this task work with us and the Sheriff's Department to work on complaints that come from the field and to interface with INS and to make sure that the complaints are followed up on and that there is a procedure in place to make sure that at least the INS, to the extent that they're willing to follow up, does so. The other thing is, I mentioned we enter into the agreement with the INS so that we can take a more proactive and direct role. And then simply with respect to the burden we would place on our building department, it would simply be, you know, print the forms, establish the manner, you know, have a file cabinet where you keep them, do a complaint line, I mean, have or web access where people can anonymously call in, say, hey, I think so-and-so is in violation of these laws. And again, we would just pass that on to INS. I think that these ideas make sense. I believe that when all local governments across America stand up and say we've had enough and put pressure on the federal government to deal with this issue, that ultimately my hope is we don't have to worry about it, because if they were doing their job, we would not have to deal with the complaints and the cost associated with this issue. And they're not doing their job, and as a consequence, it puts a burden on our community and it's tearing our country apart. We are balkanizing this country. We've seen in recent days the fractionalization that's occurring. We have an estimated 12 million illegals right now. What do we do when we have 50 or 60 million and they're projecting that by the year 225, that's where we're going to be unless we do something to control the borders. It's a complicated issue with respect to what you do to the folks that are already here, but it's something that the folks in Congress, and particularly our congressman, who's a majority leader, in the caucus who has a lot to say about this. It's time that they stand up, and we've got a United States Senator that's up for re-election this year. I believe that they can start very simply by just reimbursing us the loss that we're incurring, the cost that we're incurring as a result of having to clean up the mess of the problem that they've created. And that would help our budget a lot. And so what I'm suggesting is we take this proposal that I'm formally offering today, send it out to the stakeholders, the building, home builders, and others, anybody else that might be interested, post it on our website, let people comment, go to the Hispanic whatever that coalition is, it's always calling anybody that brings the issue up, a racist or a bigot, send it out to them, let them comment on it, and get ideas back how we can improve it, and then as a commission we can go forward and come up with an informed decision about how we might play a role in dealing with this very, very real and very, very important problem.
Mr. President.
Yes.
Mike, for obvious reasons, I do not approve of individuals illegally entering our country. It is breaking the law. Just some words of caution, though. In the declaration you suggest the county present to those seeking building permit, they are asked to say that they will not knowingly employ undocumented workers. Did you mean only to prohibit employers who know they're hiring undocumented workers when they hire them? Or rather, do you want employers to be held liable for employing undocumented workers whether they know they are doing it or not? How does one discern the difference between undocumented and documented legal workers? What kind of training are you proposing to provide to our building inspectors so they can know the difference? Normally, once a crime occurs or is reported to have occurred, law enforcement officers initiate a report of the crime, investigate, and prosecute the offenders. Who are you suggesting assumes this role with respect to falsifying permit declarations? I assume some employers of undocumented workers are not going to cooperate with this type of investigation. How will our employees, who are building inspectors, be able to obtain search warrants and issue subpoenas for the information they need to prosecute for this offense? Building and zoning department officials are not law enforcement officers. They do not have arrest powers. Butler County Sheriff Rick Jones and the U.S. Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers are proper authorities, and they have begun a joint effort to enforce the laws concerning illegal immigration in this county. They have posted billboards, they have made advertisements in the media to warn the various businesses of what their intent is, which I think is good of them, which he told us that he was doing. And I would be happy to direct our building inspectors to report any suspicious activity they observe to the proper authorities. I would also be in favor of having a work session with the sheriff and the prosecutor to discuss what we can properly do to help them. Might take those things in mind as well.
Yeah, but if I may, Mr. President, sure. Let me answer the first two of the questions that you raised. Well, let me go to the third first. Actually, the work session and involving the prosecutor and all the other stakeholders, the sheriff and others. In fact, I would invite INS to, if they got somebody that they'll send to us. One of the issues with INS, and I won't get into which company it was, but 4 weeks ago, I brought what I considered a very serious complaint regarding, I don't know if it was factual or not, but it came from a source that was, several sources that were reliable, about a local employer, and I sent a letter to the INS saying, look into this. I've not received anything back from them. I have no idea if they followed up on it, whatever. I will be following back up with them again, trying to find out just who down there deals with this is difficult enough. It would be helpful to me if I had somebody in this county, as we do in so many other issues, that would be the point person, and I could say, here, go to them. You're the interface with INS. You know these people, and let's work with them to find out. Well, I don't know. He's doing it on certain things, but with respect to employers and how they're he's starting a new phase. And my point is, I don't know, you know, exactly how that. It may be very well that the sheriff, what I suggested in this proposal is the sheriff be our point person in the event we can get an agreement with INS to be more directly involved. But let me go to the first two questions you ask about the employers. How do they know? There is a website and a hotline at Social Security Department that you can call and check the Social Security number. It's there now. Any employer hiring any employee can go online or call that number toll free, plug in the Social Security number, and it will come back and tell you whether that's a valid number. So the answer to your question, how would they know? They would know if they would take a moment to check. And the fact is they don't want to know, because what they don't want to know is they know that a lot of them are working who are not, don't have the right documentation.
Does that tell you if it's a valid number or who it's actually issued to?
It tells you if it's a valid number, and whether or not it tells you who it's issued to, I don't know.
I would hope not.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they just tell you. I mean, they tell you whether it's.
They could come up with a Social Security card. You know, that's not a big trick.
Well, that's, in other words, they're only, in other words, to your question of how deep do you want to drill, I'm not suggesting that this be a CSI investigation every time that somebody comes along and says, we want to, we believe so-and-so is hiring illegals. Frankly, I don't think you have to drill too deep.
Well, there's quite a bit of obvious things going on.
Yeah, in other words, I don't think you have to drill too deep. And that's why I'm saying I'm not suggesting that that we invest a lot of resource. I don't believe in order to get compliance, I don't believe we have to invest a lot of resources and time. The questions you raised about inspections and what you know, how deep do we want to drill, what training do we want to give them, that's why I want to have that work session you referred to, have a conversation with Bill Balsinger, have a conversation with Mike Yingling to really lay out and say, okay, what's reasonable here, what can we do that doesn't get in the way of the work that you primarily have to do and doesn't sacrifice that, but is reasonable enough that we can just hand this off to somebody. And our guys are out there and gals, they, you know, they got a sense of what's going on.
Let them be present in the
work session. And let them, you know, let them come to the work session. And then all I'm suggesting is right now we have no mechanism in place. I mean, we just kind of, what I'm suggesting is, and I believe this sincerely, if local governments were to say to the federal government, look, we've had enough. We are going to do what you failed to do, and we're going to continue to put pressure, and we're going to continue to make referrals to the INS. And then we're going to track to see, well, what happened to those referrals? Did they follow up on it? If nothing else occurs from that, we'll get a log on, well, we referred them, you know, 500 cases, and we only have a report back on 20. And at least it'll measure their capacity to respond. Right now, there's no accountability in the system because there's no one holding them accountable for following up on these things. That's something that whether it's the sheriff, whether it's our people, whether it's in cooperation with the auditor, if we have one person, and I think the idea of having that shared cost, and if the auditor in her budget has said, look, I'll absorb that cost, then it doesn't come out of our budget and it's sensitive to the budget restrictions we have, then, you know, it's something that we can, then we can sit down and work through and say, well, what is a reasonable way to deal with this? I think that we have a role to play and we can make a difference and we all know what's going on. And it puts everybody in a bad position. If you are a home builder and you are competing in the market, and you know your competition is using illegals, it puts you in a heck of a mess Because if they're building that house for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 less because they're basically employing slave labor, what are you going to do? Go out of business? If you're a subcontractor and you're building and trying to work in the market, how do you deal with when the home builder says, look, I've got these pressures? I mean, nobody wants to be in the position they're in. The home builders don't want to be in that position. But unfortunately, the person who breaks the most rules and breaks the most laws ends up getting the best economic advantage. Certainly the immigrants that are here don't want to be in that position because I had a report about 5 weeks ago, one fell off a house at a subdivision and really fell off the roof and hurt themselves badly. And they couldn't report it to workers' comp because they basically said, you go to workers' comp and report this, they're going to deport you. And that's the conditions that they're under. So that's why the federal government has to be pressured to do this. And I think by local government stepping up, it'll just add one more piece of pressure to the system to say, look, come to a fair resolution, at least effective as far as protecting our borders are concerned. That's something that virtually everyone agrees on. Let's seal the borders, north and south. Now the question of what do you do with the ones that are here, I would approach that differently than most of the core conservatives. I would say the ones that are here, I agree with the president. Let them earn an opportunity to stay. Put conditions on their being here. That's a controversial issue. That's politically explosive. But in order to solve it, I think you got to make both the liberals and the conservatives angry. But sometime in this country, we have to set aside partisanship and say what's good for America. And what's good for America is to seal our borders, to come to some terms to allow for guest workers to come here and do these jobs. And I don't believe one bit of the rhetoric they say, well, they're taking jobs Americans won't take. They're taking jobs that we outlawed 100 years ago, working under conditions where they don't have the safety protections and the unemployment. They're not paying the taxes that they're supposed to pay. And we've created this special preferred class of workers that benefits people who break the law at the expense of those who abide by the law and creates a subclass that really is inhuman in terms of the treatment they get. The idea that you'd pay somebody $50 a day to work 14 hours with no benefits is absolutely repulsive. But that is happening, and it's wrong, and it's just a shame that everybody has to deal with this, and there's one reason why we all have to deal with it. And it's because the federal government has failed to meet their responsibilities. And that's it. They failed.
Mr. President, if I may add, the Sheriff Jones has been very out front on this, and he's gotten national acclaim from his stance that he's taken. And with these advertisements, it says quite plainly what he's planning on doing. And I think he has a pretty extensive game plan in place once the warnings have had time to saturate or get everybody had time to read them or know what's coming. I was wondering if you would want to consider discussing with the auditor the possibility of her person working with the sheriff's department.
Absolutely.
Or have her support or pay for a law enforcement officer that could concentrate more on this field to help the sheriff's department, because he's the point person, he's the main guy, and he's doing the job, and I think we should support him every way we can.
Absolutely. And I, you know, this whole issue evolved out of an initial discussion I had with the sheriff when we went through the last budget cycle. And that's when I just kind of, when we were going, it wasn't this budget, but last year, as we were looking at our budget, and I called him, how much money are we spending on illegal aliens in the jail? And that's when we started getting some numbers. And we started talking about it, and I said, look, and out of those discussions evolved a four-pronged approach. Sheriff was going to take on the part that he did. I told him I'd take on the employers in the areas that we had licensing authority or permit authority, and we'd get the auditor to take on the vendors and work with Representative Combs to take on the state changes. The fact that that I mean, the sheriff has provided outstanding leadership on this, and I have every confidence in whether it's the sheriff or I don't care who it is. I think the sheriff has already demonstrated that he's got the guts to make tough decisions and take the heat, and I have no problem whatsoever working through his office. We look at this, and I'm not suggesting and proposing this. Boy, this is the best idea in the whole world. I'm suggesting that it's a start for discussion. Let's deal with it, and as Commissioner John Levette can understand, having been in the legislature, I'm used to things being amended and improved in the process. And I would invite you and Mr. Furman and anybody else that has as an approach that you know to improve it.
I just want to try to guard against our building inspectors taking on the job of being police officers.
I agree with you.
When I was in law enforcement, I used to tinker with my car until I'd get it messed up. And I'd have to take it to a friend to have it repaired, and my friend told me that if I quit tinkering with the car, he sure would promise me he wouldn't try to do law enforcement. So I think that's what we got here.
And I agree with you.
You know, I think that this is absolutely a very serious problem that the country faces. Is it the real serious problem that we face in Butler County? I'm not sure, but I understand the motives in saying that we want to send a message from the Midwest to Washington that it's not just the southern borders or the western borders that are concerned about this issue. But what I worry about, and you know, be happy to support this to move forward and to have work sessions, is that we need to be careful that we don't have racial profiling with regards to the building inspectors. We could be in serious trouble with that as a government. And also to say, okay, where are we going to stop at this? Are we going to just stop at the construction trade? Or are we going to say, okay, we know that we have illegal immigrants living in Butler County. Where are they staying? And for the most part, you can't buy a home if you don't have a Social Security number and not documented. So that must mean that they're staying in homes that landlords own and renting. Now, we'd go after the landlords for harboring criminals. You know, do we go after the schools and say, hey, you know, if you have any kids that aren't documented, their parents aren't documented, let's kick them out. If we go to the hospitals and say, hey, if they can't prove that they have Social Security numbers or documented, don't treat them, that sends a message also, too. But is it the right message that we want to send? You know, Mike, I agree that, you know, with the president's plan of having guest workers, I think that's a way that we need to go, and certainly we're not going to be busing 11 million people back across the border. It's just not practical. But we also need to be careful of, you know, how far we take this, because it wasn't too far ago in our memories that we were rounding up people and putting them in fairgrounds, in racetracks, because we thought that they were going to be subversive or detrimental to the country. So I worry about where this is headed and to the extent of this problem, but we're willing to support this and move it forward. But, you know, I'm going to try to be a cautionary voice in these discussions to make sure that we do things the right way and we know what the end game is. Is the end game that we don't want any illegal immigrants living in Butler County, period. And then there's a lot of things that we can do if we want to do them to make that happen.
Well, Mr. President, let me make clear. So I don't blame. It'd be like if I lived in a neighborhood where everyone on the block was starving and their families were literally dying of starvation, and I passed out flyers in the neighborhood saying, I just want you to know I've got a full pantry of food, I've got a full refrigerator, and my doors are unlocked all the time. and I come home and find my house filled with people raiding my refrigerator, and I wonder, well, why in the world would they do this? Well, I don't blame them. They're starving. I've told them my home is open, and I've told them that they can come anytime, and I'm not going to do anything about it. And that's what we've done in America. These people that come here, I actually admire because they risk their life to come to America, like many of the immigrants that came before. So they're starving. But we can't take on every starving person in the world. It will sink the boat. It's like a life raft that's out there. And you take in one, and that's fine. You take in two. Eventually, you reach a tipping point where the next person you take in, you sink the whole raft. Now, we're not talking about rounding anybody up, and I'm not talking about solving all the problems in the world here. The issue of where you stop is our authority is limited. There are certain things we have authority to do, such as building permits. We know that that's an industry where there's rampant violation of the law. Does that mean it's the only industry? Of course not. So it's in the food industry. That's why the auditor's involved with the vending permits. It's in all industries. And we can't regulate all industries. We don't have the lawful authority to deal with it. So we'll take the piece that the state legislature and the Lord has given us and see if we can make a difference on that. With respect to the issue of housing and their neighborhoods and across this country, where that has become an issue on zoning. It's come down to you get one house in the neighborhood and all of a sudden there's 15 or 20 people living in it, unrelated. And that does become a zoning enforcement issue because it affects the quality of life in the neighborhood. So I understand in the balance and the problem, the frustration that anyone has in dealing with this issue is it goes when we first raised it. There are groups out there that says, well, you're a bigot, you're going to round up everybody and go back to the days where just by virtue of the color of their skin or their physical features, you're discriminating against them. Look, there are a lot of people in this country that have made this country outstanding, and they are immigrants, and they've come through the process legally. And those people have played by the rules. And I think that we owe it to them to make sure that other people play by the rules too. And if they don't seal the borders, I mean, we're going to reach a time when we lose control of this country to millions, tens of millions of people who don't have a first loyalty to America. And that's terrible. That's not good. That's not good for Butler County. That's not good for Hamilton, Ohio. It's not good for the taxpayer. And if we can't deal with it now when we've got 12 million of them, what on earth makes anyone think it'll be easier to deal with when we've got 50 million?
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you.
I mean,
I'm not being disingenuous or hollow about it. I don't know. But
referring to the previous menu.
Yeah.
This one was much better.
Yeah. but I think that, and I 100% support that we need to strengthen our borders. We need to be willing as a nation to say, hey, I'm going to spend more tax dollars in order to strengthen the borders to make sure that people who want to come to America come the right way and become good citizens. And I agree that we can't allow the immigrants, whether they're here legitimately or illegally, to try to not assimilate to our culture. And I support that English should be the official language. It has to be. Don't support having, a Spanish national anthem. That just doesn't make sense. The people who come here, and I think by and large they want to become assimilated to our culture because that's why they came here in the first place, is to come to the land of opportunity, to be able to get a piece of the American dream. But I worry about the things that I mentioned, but and I certainly don't want to be I want to be a part of the solution and not the problem.
Yeah.
But I just want to be a cautionary piece in that solution.
That's fair enough. And on the issue of disingenuous and hollow, I just want to make it clear. Just then, let's don't hang out straw man issues that I'm not proposing. I'm not proposing a whole host of things and debate issues that I'm not proposing. Let's deal with the issues that I have brought to you. And I agree with the whole list that you just made about things we shouldn't do. And I'm not proposing any of those things. So, and I'm not suggesting that there's something magical or sacred about the list that I've got here, because as we think and talk about it, what I've learned is that when you get more heads at the table, you get a better approach to things. And as I said at the outset, I'm not suggesting for a moment that we turn our building department into an INS. And I agree with Commissioner Furman. There's only certain things that actually all I'm suggesting we do with them is figure out a referral service, whether it's to the sheriff or the INS and whatever it is, but we just kind of keep tabs on it and say, okay, we sent them down X number of cases. How many are they followed up on and what do we know about them? But anyway, we'll get into the details as we go. So I appreciate the indulgence and appreciate your consideration.
There's one other issue that I wanted to bring up, and that is the contract that we're trying to develop with Hamilton County with regards to the prisoners. To my knowledge, to this date, we haven't reached an agreement, and I'm concerned that Hamilton County is they want the ability to use our jail but not pay for the cost and to safeguard us with regards to a minimum amount that they'd be willing to pay for in order for us to staff the jail in potential of 200 or whatever prisoners it is. And the reason why I say this is that the jail census, the first weekend when we have this gentleman's agreement, was up to almost 200. Then it went back to 113. And if the sheriff tells me that he's hired some people, at that amount, we're not going to even break even. We're going to be losing money. We need to make sure that we send the message to Hamilton County. They need to be able to say to us that they're willing to reserve or take or pay a certain amount of prisoners in order for us just to meet the cost of staffing for the additional people. We can't be going like a yo-yo up and down with prisoner population, because that'll just drain the amount of money that we have to expend. Just throw that out, that I think Hamilton County needs to become serious and recognize our problems with regards to the cost associated with manning the jail, and that we just can't hire people and then not have a commitment from Hamilton County of the inmates coming.
I agree. We can't let their problem drain us further than we already are, so I fully support that.
And if I may, Mr. President, I don't know if it was a news story or something. I mean, this was a couple weeks ago where somebody was complaining about down there about how much time it was taking for the lawyers to come back and forth and what was going to cost the public defenders and all this sort of thing. And I may have sent you guys a copy of.
I don't remember that one, Mike.
Anyway, we just get our own people to use it, it'd be helpful, but we have technology to allow their lawyers to not even leave their office and talk to their client in a secure setting. So this notion that they got to drive, I mean, I don't know what they want to hug their client or what, but they don't really need to be in physical contact with them. to
Who's
have
complaining about that? I don't know.
There was a story. Hamilton County.
County.
Yeah. Hamilton County was saying, well, gee, this is. Yeah, Todd Fortune, I think, raised it. And they said, oh, it's going to cost, we got to send the prosecutors down there to interview them, and we got to send the defense attorneys down. I'm thinking, what is this, you know, touchy-feely? I mean, I don't know why they got to be in this, you know. They got, you know, hug the screen.
I don't think they're aware that we had that.
And so anyway, I sent this down to Phil Heimlich, and he and I have kind of traded calls. I've also sent it over to Greg Sullivan, and Greg has indicated that it would be very easy to put the system in place through our fiber system.
See that camera?
I mean, it's
just that.
It's doing right here what we're on the web, and it can be done in a secure way so that it's encoded for the, you know, you got to protect the client, what do you call it,
attorney privilege.
And you can do it in a way that the attorneys and the client have different codes that scrambles everything, and you can't. And for those that worry about that, I mean, if that were an issue, there's nothing. In other words, if they think that somebody's going to break the law and intrude on their conversations, well, they could tape everything that's being said in the interview room anyway. I mean, there's the technology that allows that secure conversation. Is actually probably every bit as secure, is more secure than the other stuff. So I don't know if that was a real concern they had or it was just one of those straw men, but we can, if that is a concern, we can eliminate that cost for them through the technology that we have available to us.
And, you know, my concern is that we need to make sure that the investment that we're making is going to break even, you know, not alone make a profit. And that goes to, you know, the idea of refurbishing the old jail before we expend whatever the dollar amount, and I've heard an estimate of $300,000 to $500,000. Before we do that, we've got to make sure that we've got a contract that's going to pay us back
right.
for that investment.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. And I mean,
and that's why I'm concerned, you know, reluctant. You know, why wouldn't they sign if they've got, if Hamilton County has, you know, so many people waiting to go to jail? Why wouldn't they sign a contract saying, hey, we're going to guarantee that we're going to give you this amount of people?
Well, I'm going to have that conversation with Phil Heimlich, and I know that our sheriff was looking for him yesterday. Because I talked to Derek, and he talked about the same thing, and that's just a given. There has to be some, and let me tell you something. As far as breaking even, you certainly want to at least do that. But if all we're going to do is break even, I don't want to go there because there's no point going there, because all that does is create a financial risk for us. Because when you increase your I don't care what we say to these employees when they're hired, that your job is just temporary and is contingent upon this contract. We all know what the pressures will be in reality. if tomorrow those beds are empty, we know that they'll be knocking on the door saying, well, gee, we got these people. Yeah. And so we need to go to extraordinary lengths to tell anyone that's brought in as a result of this contract that, look, your job depends upon this contract. And
I mean, and that's why, you know, when we say that, hey, we're going to, you know, potentially reap this much money, we're not going to know that for, you know, to the end of the year or what, unless we have a real good contract that we know that they're going to, you know, guarantee us 150 or 200 people. And then we can decide, you know, what do we do with this money? And there's a lot of options to that we need to address if that comes true, but we're by no means going to be reaping a benefit from what I understand, what we're experiencing right now in the first 2 weeks. My political gut tells me that this could have been just a little political gamesmanship down in Hamilton County saying to get people thinking that, hey, we need to build a jail, And then, you know, that splash is over, so, well, let's not send so many up to Butler County. So, but yet we're ramping up for so many people and not realizing that. That would be bad.
The other thing in that regard on our budget, there are two ideas. One that came back from our the Milken Conference with more fervently believing in, and I do this at the risk of my own interest, but one of the things...